How's this hooked up?
They're just USB mics, and they're going directly into this computer over here.
Okay.
So I had see all this stuff.
Yeah.
This is really pretty cool high-end microphone shit.
Yeah.
I had it all hooked up. It was working beautifully. Uh-huh. I didn't do anything with it for about, I don't know, a couple of months. And I turned it back on to do an interview, and none of it worked.
Oh, no. Wonder why.
I discovered that electronic shit is kind of like that. If you don't use it a lot and keep up with it, it kind of dies on you. That's why a buddy of mine is going to join me on my podcast and do interviews with me. It's eventually what I want to get into is doing some more interviews. And he is a technical guy. And he's actually going to help me set up the cameras. I had the cameras all set up and everything at one point. Uh-huh. But it all quit working, so...
Yeah, that's really cool.
I put these USB mics in here, but just because they work.
What's the benefit of all of this versus just a USB mic?
So it sounds a lot better.
It does.
It's just basically it's warmer. That sounds a little tinny with these. There's stuff I can do on the software that I have that makes it sound actually a lot better. But if you start out with good quality audio and video, when you do the post-production, it works a lot better. Sounds better.
Sweet. That's pretty cool.
So
how does this work?
Huh?
How does this all work?
Well, I'm just going to... It's totally informal. You don't need to know the history of jiu-jitsu, although I know that you're... very knowledgeable at it anyway, so it's mostly I'm going to ask you what got you inspired. It's going to kind of be the history of jiu-jitsu with Spencer Kimber. So what originally 11 years ago or whenever it was, what inspired you to start doing it?
All right. Sounds good.
Get a little closer to your mic.
How's this?
There, yeah.
Is that too close?
Bring the mic to you. There you go.
All right. Just gonna look up one more thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just fact checking myself.
So let's see. 11 years ago would have been 2010. No, 2012.
2012 is when I started. December of 2012.
And what inspired you?
So, basically, I just got done 4 years of track and moved down with my dad in Mississippi and kept that routine going of lifting weights and running. But to be honest, it was getting pretty tedious and I was in this...
Be careful how you use that word, by the way.
What?
Tedious.
Oh, why is that?
TD.
Oh. Tedious. So I was working out of this gym in Gulfport, Mississippi, and I saw this little paper flyer, and it said Bernardo Patel, jiu-jitsu, 6-time world champion, 7-time Pan Am champion, or something ridiculous, just massively credentialed, won all these tournaments. And I recall in high school I was watching some short documentary on the origins of the UFC. And it started with, basically, it was like this experiment where no one really knew what the best martial arts was. And all of these people that have probably practiced their discipline that they thought was the best for 10, 20 years, like, saw this as sort of like their, you know, their testing grounds where they could go and try out what they've been practicing, what they've dedicated their whole life to in... you know, probably the most realistic situation you could get in. So in this, you know, short documentary, you had all these people with different backgrounds like karate or judo or boxing or sumo wrestling even. And this guy, Hoist Gracie, he's like 170 pounds, I think, like maybe 6'1", tall, lanky guy, just beat everyone. I mean, his fights were really fast. Everyone had, maybe from, I'm not sure, but maybe from Kung Fu movies or something, everyone thought it's all about punching and Bruce Lee and kicking and striking. And it's like he had this, like, cheat code. Like, he, like, figured out this hack to, like, beat everyone. So at that point, I was like, I just sort of tucked this information away in my mind that if I ever do a martial art, it's going to be jiu-jitsu because it's obviously the best. And so then, you know, going forward to late 2012 or early 2013, I walked and tried this class with Bernardo Patel. Bernardo's not a big guy. He's probably 5'7", 5'8", maybe. And I'm just coming off Division I track and field, you know, running, you know, strongest I've ever been in my life. I think I squat like 450 pounds, benched over 300. And so this guy, Bernardo, in his broken English, because he's, you know, from Brazil, so he's thick Portuguese accent. He's like, just wrestle me, do whatever feels normal. And he just basically manhandled me. Like,
turned you every which way but loose.
Oh, I couldn't do anything. I was like a baby in his arms, basically. And so it was just the most humbling experience. It's a common theme that a lot of people say about jiu-jitsu. It's just like the most humbling thing because you just don't realize how helpless you are. And I thought that being, you know, competing at a pretty high level in track and field, that athleticism would transfer over, and it did not at all. So awesome. I signed up immediately. I was like, okay, I got to figure this out.
You want to be able to do this thing that this guy's doing to you?
Yeah, it's like a superpower. I mean, I think that's what Jocko Williams says. Like, he's like, his daughter asked him, I saw some clip on YouTube, he's like, what's the
superpower? Yeah, it was Rogan, I remember that.
Yeah, and it
so
it
it's like a superpower. That's awesome. So Rogan is pretty big time jiu-jitsu in the Brazilian jiu-jitsu, especially, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of people, Lex Fridman, Joe Rogan, and, you know, I've trained at all these different gyms, and I think there's like a correlation between folks that are sort of cerebral, I guess. You see a lot of like working professionals and, you know, that are, you know, folks like doctors and lawyers and stuff that get higher up in the ranks of jiu-jitsu. And I think it's, I think there's a few reasons for that. One is this sort of strategy aspect to it. So people that are more into strategy and, you know, like to think, use their, what's it called, like type two thinking. I think that's the thinking where you like use a lot more calories and you're, you know, really thoughtful and critically think about certain things. I think that people that are, you know, naturally more inclined to that like jiu-jitsu because it's like this game of chess or this puzzle that you're trying to figure out with your other, you know, sparring partner. And then in addition to that, you know, it takes a lot of like discipline to stick in it long enough to get really good. Right. So I think, you know, folks that are more cerebral and folks that have sort of discipline to do things are the ones that really progress along in jiu-jitsu because they'll have the sort of work ethic and discipline to stick into it. So, I think that's why you sort of see like Joe Rogan or Lex Fridman or these highly intellectual people. And you sort of see that reflected on the mats usually, because if someone comes in and they're not, you know, they just don't have the discipline to stick with it, they quit, right? Or you get to blue belt in 2 years, 2.5 years, and then, you know, then they're like, okay, I accomplished this. This is all I want out of it.
Moving right? on.
Yeah, moving on to the next thing.
So the physical strength isn't necessarily a big thing in jiu-jitsu. It's more knowing the moves and knowing how to apply them.
Yeah, I think... So that's the idea behind jiu-jitsu, is that you're using leverage. It was created with the concept that the smaller guy can beat the bigger guy, right? And that's what Hoist did in the UFCs. I mean, he beat people that were much larger than him. I think if someone knows more about jiu-jitsu than the other person, they're going to win. When things start to become more equal in terms of knowledge in jiu-jitsu, then strength and stamina certainly can beat out the other person. So, yeah, I think it's and I've seen it with certain, like you go to a gym, and one of the gyms I trained at, there was this woman who was a purple belt, smaller than most of the guys, and she could beat everyone easily all the way through white belt. And then once she got to the blue belt level, the guys there, she was better technically than all the blue belts, but their strength, just being guys, sort of overpowered her. But all, many of those white belts were much stronger than her, but she could just do whatever she wanted to them.
So, when I was growing up, a TV show came out called Kung Fu, and it inspired my entire generation into martial arts. Was there anything like that that inspired you? I mean, did when you were a little kid, were you going, "Yeah, I'm going to learn Kung Fu, I'm going to learn judo or karate or whatever like that," and then you just kind of morphed into jiu-jitsu, or was it more all of a sudden that, like you said, you saw the.
I mean, I think everyone growing up likes the idea of being able to defend themselves, right? And maybe they fantasize about the idea of like being Bruce Lee and some guy picks on them or picks on someone else, and then you just handle the situation with your martial arts. But I never really thought, like, I was never really into martial arts or, more than anyone else. And I loved action movies growing up, but I didn't, have a burning desire to go out there and learn these skills. It's just when I saw this documentary, this short documentary, I said, okay, if I were to do martial arts, then I would do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu because it's the most effective. And then when I rolled with Bernardo Patel and I just got demolished, then at that point, and not only that, but I went to the bathroom and I had so much lactic acid built up in my body that I threw up in the toilet like three times. I was like, this is just a killer workout. I mean, there's nothing else that can compare. And then two, it's just an amazing skill. I mean, who wouldn't want to learn how to do that?
Exactly. It's there's something really inspiring about knowing that you don't really want to go start a fight, but if somebody does something stupid around you, knowing that you're going to be able to handle the situation is probably gives you inspiration to continue and get better.
Absolutely. You'll probably be okay. I mean, I would say, though, doing jiu-jitsu, I've also learned that I think I would be more hesitant to get in a fight, to be honest. And I know that sounds weird, but the reason for that is sometimes you see people at the gym that look very unassuming, that do not look athletic, that can absolutely demolish, anyone. So, I don't think you can really judge a. I can't really judge a book by their cover anymore. I could look at someone and they might look, smaller and not as athletic, but you never know. I mean, this guy could be doing mixed martial arts and Muay Thai and jiu-jitsu and, but more than that though is probably just the, people carry around knives and guns, so jiu-jitsu is not going to help you in
That's a
those
good segue
situations.
into my next question about what happens if somebody's got a knife
Yeah,
or a gun.
so the original Gracies believed a lot in like the self-defense aspects of jiu-jitsu, which fortunately or unfortunately have been maybe forgotten or put on the side. Right now, jiu-jitsu has evolved to like sport jiu-jitsu. Like a lot of people are into it and do competitions, like wrestling competitions, like if you that same sort of idea. But if you go to like a traditional Gracie gym, they teach you all of the, they make sure in the curriculum, they teach you the sports stuff, but they also teach you the knife defense, the gun defense, you know, the best way to get out if someone grabs you from behind, or, you know, a lot of the situations that are typical, you know, if someone grabs you around the throat, like what to do in those situations. But they tell you, I mean, if someone pulls out a gun, a knife, or especially a gun, you just want to de-escalate the situation and get out of there. If you go into a knife fight with someone, like, and you have to go into a knife fight with someone, yes, you might have some techniques, but just be mentally prepared that you are going to get stabbed or you're going to get sliced. But you know not to put your arms in this direction or that direction, because if they slice certain areas or if they slice, you know, your vital organs, then, you know, you're done.
Yeah.
So, but that said, there have been, just in my long jiu-jitsu career, I've encountered folks that have run into real situations. And one guy at my gym the other week, he's a bartender. Some guy pulled out a knife out, once I kicked him out of the bar, and he tried to stab someone, and he grabbed his arm, you know, got the knife out of his hand and held him down until the cops came. Another guy at the gym I trained at in Durham, this was part of a real traditional Gracie gym, so we did a lot of self-defense technique. And some guy at a gas station, he said this was totally stupid in hindsight, but at a gas station, pulled out a gun and tried to mug him at his car, and he didn't even think. It was pure instinct. He grabbed the gun, flipped him over his shoulder, like judo threw him, and, you know, basically beat the crap out of the assailant.
Those are the stories you like to hear about.
Oh, yeah. There's so many. Like, this other guy, some guy was trying to beat up his daughter on the train, the subway in New York, and he just, you know, took him to the ground and until the next stop, and then they got off the train. Like, happens all the time.
Well, there was one kind of famous one recently in the last couple of months where a jiu-jitsu guy held down an assailant that was, I don't know the story, you probably know it better than I do. He was apparently a jiu-jitsu guy, I think it was in New York, and this guy was just getting rowdy on the subway, and the jiu-jitsu guy grabbed him and held him down till the cops got there. Made big splash in the news, you know, because somebody had a video of it or something.
That one I'm not familiar with. I do know that there was one about a year ago. It was not a jiu-jitsu guy. It was like a military guy, but he used a jiu-jitsu technique, which was the bare naked choke. So there was some guy on the train who is causing a ruckus, and I didn't look too deeply into it, but he and this guy supposedly is very controversial on the news. This guy supposedly had gotten in trouble for assaulting people on the train, probably had some mental disabilities, and was freaking people out. And then this military guy basically applied a jiu-jitsu technique, took the back, put him in a bare naked choke, and then the guy eventually, you know, died, passed away. Now, the sad thing about that is, I mean, had he been trained in jiu-jitsu, that guy never would have, you know, died, because
he would have given up before it got to the point where he would be threatened. His life would be threatened.
Probably. So one thing you learn when you apply these chokes is you're cutting off the circulation to your brain, right? And people will pass out pretty quickly, but over a prolonged period of time, then you start to get brain damage. So this guy must have been held in a deep bare naked choke for minutes. I mean, probably 5 minutes, right? So the guy, I mean, it's just dangerous. This guy had this knowledge to apply this technique, but didn't really understand what he was doing. He thought he was helping people, but a jiu-jitsu person would know not to. You're going to kill the guy if you keep the bare naked choke fully synced in for too long of a time. So,
did that guy deserve to die if he's creating all this problem?
I don't think so. No.
So, as when you're in class and when you're rolling with people who you're just training with, are there certain things that you're taught where you don't hurt someone?
Yeah, absolutely. There are. So there are certain. I mean, pretty much anything goes in jiu-jitsu except for you can't punch someone. And you can't grab fingers. You can break someone's fingers. But there are some, you know, certain techniques you're not supposed to apply on different color belts. Stuff that people can get injured really easily if they don't know what's happening to them. Aside from that, you can pretty much anything goes when you're wrestling. One of the biggest dangers though is when you have two guys that are brand new at jiu-jitsu, or a lot of people come in to the class with, you know, really just charged up, like I'm ready to wrestle and, you know, beat the other person and they have to win, but they don't really have much technique. Then you have another guy with the same mindset and they can sometimes injure each other. Or sometimes the other week, these two white belts were wrestling at our gym and it escalated into a fight, you know, like a verbal fight. So a verbal fight and almost a fist fight, but we, you know, settled that down. But yeah, those things can happen.
So just randomly pick a couple of moves and describe what you're doing when you're doing them. Like, just watching today was interesting to me because I saw that there are maneuvers that you do. Uh-huh. And so you said it was like a chess game. When somebody does a certain move, you recognize the move and you're able to counter it, or you have specific moves that you do in certain situations, or what's a description of a move?
Yeah, I mean, there are, so one move that is common is the guard, and that's where, and you see this on UFC, it's in a altercation, you want to be on top doing the punching, right? You want to be able to drop your body weight down and put a fist or an elbow into someone's face or what have you. So the idea in jiu-jitsu is that you can get your legs in between the person, which is called open guard, or you can get a closed guard where you pull them in really close. And when you pull, so you wrap your legs around the person, you pull them in close, you break their posture, and they effectively can't punch you. And if they do punch you, they can't get much power behind it. So it's a relatively safe position. George St. Pierre says, if you get in a street fight, you either want to, and you're on your back, you want to have them either really close, or so they can't punch you, or you want to have them really far away. So there's certain techniques to like get up and create some distance. But it becomes, so at, you know, at first you sort of learn these fundamental positions of how to get out of the guard, how to get into a better position to either apply, you know, better striking or apply your submissions. But it becomes a chess game because once the other person learns the rule set, then they know how you're trying to pass the guard, how you're trying to get out of the position, right? And then you naturally sort of respond. You go, okay, I know they're trying to get out of my guard by doing this, so I'm going to stop them by doing this, right? And then once you get better, you know, two or three or four or five options, and it becomes this like game theory where it's like, okay, I'm going to make this person think I'm going to pass the guard by doing this, but it's really just a setup so that way I can go do this other move.
That's awesome.
So you start to get... Like, you notice in like competitions with earlier practitioners of jiu-jitsu, they get very linear in their thinking and they're like, I have to do this move. I have to do this move. Right. And they get stuck in this like linear sort of thought process. But when you become better, it's not so much about like your physical exertion, it's all about your strategy. And you start to think more multi-dimensionally, and you're like, okay, they're trying to do this move, so I will go this way, you know, or I'll do this, or I've got these three options here. So that's how it sort of, that's what people mean when they say it's like human chess, you know.
I saw a Sherlock Holmes movie, and I never can remember actors' names, but there was a scene in that where Sherlock is going to beat this guy up, and he does that exact thing. He's got they show his mental images, and he says, okay, if this guy does this, I'm going to do this, and he gives him the two on the side, you know, and he describes the whole fight before it ever even happens, knowing exactly what the other guy was going to do and knowing exactly what he was going to do to win. That's pretty awesome, I think. To know that much about outcomes to be able to beat it, you know, be able to be ahead of it.
So. Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. It's the movie with Robert Downey Jr.
Yes.
Yeah. It is a lot like that. I mean, it's not exactly like that, but yeah. that's a good.
In reality, you probably don't have time to do all the mental imaging and all that stuff. You're just into it, and you do what you know you need to do in that second or that moment.
It's a mix. I think some stuff is reactionary. Your body eventually builds this muscle memory to know what to do in certain situations. But the other is very cerebral. It's a lot of thinking. And there have been times when I've been rolling with someone and they're just, you know, they might be 20 something years old and wrestled in high school and just, you know, really athletic, and I'm getting smashed and I can't really do much. But then I just stop, you know, I sort of slow down my, fight or flight response, right? My, your
gut reaction,
sympathetic nervous system, right? Yeah. Where it's just, and which is probably creating a lot of adrenaline, and I'm not thinking very clearly. And then I consciously like, okay, Spencer, calm down, just think, right? And then then immediately the obvious moves are right there. Then I get a sweep and I get a submission immediately. So yeah, it is a mix of both. But I think as you get better, the more clearly you can think, the better you're going to do. It's always going to be better than the adrenaline rush of like, I must get on top. I must smash this person, you know?
So is it one of those things where you could do it for the rest of your life and still learn stuff?
Yeah, I think so. There's like constant innovation in jiu-jitsu. I mean, people do this at all different ages. I think the oldest person I trained with was in Wrightsville Beach, North Carolina. And it was this woman that I think she was in her 70s and she was training with us. I mean, people know to roll with them and practice with them in a certain, you know, way, not to just, you know,
break the fragile bones.
There's all different ages, all different people do it, and it's always evolving. I mean, when I started 12 years ago, they taught a lot of like very basic techniques, and now it's evolved where there are moves even shown to me from like blue belts that are watching YouTube all day that I've never even seen before. You know, I think one of the biggest things that changed in the past decade was there's a lot of what they call like leg attacks. So usually when you think about fighting, it's about punching someone in the face, or you think about wrestling, it's about getting them on their back, right? And it's all sort of like upper body attacks, right? Grab them, choke them out by their neck, grab their arm. But now, because everyone's gotten so proficient at this, and this is probably the sport jiu-jitsu that's sort of done this, people now realize it's too hard to hold the person on their back. I'm just going to grab their ankle and break their ankle, or grab their heel and twist their heel and do what they call a heel hook. So all the tournaments now, I think it's one of the highest submissions are all these like leg attacks. So it evolves. I mean, it's always, people are always innovating, coming up with new stuff. It's probably a lot of it's very impractical for like a self-defense perspective, but from a competition perspective, it's a game, right? And if everyone knows these certain set of techniques, you got to learn something that no one else, that people don't know as well, so that way you can beat the other person.
Have an edge.
Exactly.
Yeah, awesome. Mm-hmm. So you're going to do it forever?
Probably. I don't know. Some people do get hopefully, I don't, knock on wood, I don't get injured. I don't think it's a high incidence of injury relative to other sports, but people do get injured. So hopefully that doesn't happen. I think there's like, what the pattern that I've seen is most people that start quit, because it's a long, it takes like 10 to 15 years to get to black belt. And a lot of people quit in the first few months. Then a lot of people quit at the blue belt. So it takes like 2 years or so to get your blue belt. That's probably as long as it takes to get a black belt in certain martial arts, mm-hmm. or pretty close.
I've heard that before, that a lot of the martial arts trying to drum up business will advance people in their belts faster so that they'll stick with it longer.
Yeah, I think that's right.
But in jiu-jitsu, it's like, nope, if you don't got it, you don't get the belt.
Yeah, it's because there's a backdrop of all these competitions, and you have to go and compete against other gyms. Not everyone does it. I would say, you know, a small subset of any gym does competitions, but most gyms have people that compete. You're sort of disincentivized to give out the belts early because, you know, you don't want your blue belts and purple belts to go to a competition and just get dominated by everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Certain gyms, they even sandbag their people, and they will, I mean, that one gym I trained at in North Carolina, that woman that could beat all the white belts, I mean, she won like, I don't know, 6-7 plus tournaments at a purple belt because the professor wants to just push their brand, right? Like, hey, look, we're just, you know, our school is dominating everyone else. She was probably a purple belt for too long, right? So yeah, that sort of happens. I think my aunt got her black belt in Taekwondo in like 2 years.
Right. So. Yeah. I've known other people who do like, it was Taekwondo. A friend of mine's daughter started it, and she was definitely awesome. Mm-hmm. But it seemed to me like she made it to black belt pretty fast. Like you said, about 2 years. And it seems like, no, from what I've known about martial arts, and that's not very much, but it seems like to get to that proficiency, if you know, it used to be that guy's a black belt in judo, you knew that he knew a lot of stuff and you didn't want to mess with him. Yeah. Now you could be a black belt in karate and somebody could just walk up and thump you because you were progressed through the black belt without really going through the process.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that. I think in jiu-jitsu, people just don't have the, I mean, I don't want to say people don't have this because, so my, what the pattern I've seen is usually people will not last very long at white belt, they'll quit. And those folks might not have the, you know, the discipline to continue, right? Then some people get to blue belt in about 2 years, and that's a sufficient enough accomplishment for them, right? They might have other things going on in their life, jobs, family, whatever. So, I mean, at this point, it's all about your personal choice to continue the journey or not. Some people just don't have the discipline to keep going. Some do, but other things happen. But then once you have that big drop-off rate at blue belt, the ones that get past that, most of them stay all the way to the end because it's part of their routine. They love it. You know, they enjoy the benefits of jiu-jitsu. Except there's one thing that can cause someone that I've seen is when people have like kids or a family or big life disruptive events, then that will, you know, get in the way of their training. Understandably so.
Yeah. You got to have your priorities.
Yeah.
When you have kids, it changes things.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the belt progression? You start with white, clearly.
Yeah, so it's white belt. I think it takes about 2 years on average for each belt. So white belt, blue belt, purple belt, brown belt, and then black belt is how it goes. And then there's some other belts after black belt, like the coral belt, and these are more like ceremonial belts. I think you get them if you have, you know, created some innovation in jiu-jitsu that, you know, it's like maybe like a Nobel Prize or something, or you've just been around it for so long. But yeah, typically ends after the black belt.
Are there degrees?
Yeah, you get four degrees for each belt. Some gyms, they follow the system more rigorously, where they get all the stripes out, and then once you get to your fourth stripe, they know. It's probably more useful for the instructor because they can keep track of everyone. But some gyms, people just know. Joe Rogan talked about this, and it's 100% true. People just know when you're ready for the next belt. That you come in, you're just beating everyone really easily at a certain belt level, and yeah, because you, unlike a lot of other martial arts, you're constantly rolling with other people, so there is like a pecking order at the gym. Like everyone kind of knows what's who's better than that, and everyone knows what belt they have. So then,
yeah,
and the instructor knows, and then they give you, I think all my belts, I got two stripes at the last gym I went at, but I've basically got promoted out to every single one without getting any of the degrees,
Well, so you and Bunny, do you practice at home or do you leave it at the gym?
She tries to practice at home, but it's not like very structured. Like she'll just come up and try to throw a choke on me or an armbar or something.
But you're ready for her, right?
Yeah, I'm always ready.
And you let her win sometimes?
Sometimes I do, if I want her to just leave me alone. I'm like, okay, you tap me out. All right, leave me alone. But it's actually been helpful because she'll do some stuff and then I'll sort of think about, okay, let me grab this heel hook or ankle lock or whatever. So, but it's been good that she started because I think it's also... it's been great to see like a lot more women getting into jiu-jitsu. And I think it's still got a ways to go. I mean, it's probably very intimidating for women to come in to a gym. And, but then once it's sort of at any given gym, once it gets past that critical mass and there's enough women there and they can start training with other women, then it's like pretty accommodating. So I think that's one of the reasons Bunny's gotten into it is because there's like I think 20 women that train in our gym, so she can just roll with women all day long if she wants. But then once they sort of are introduced, then they can try the mixed, combined classes or what have you. But there's all sorts of great videos and stuff on the internet of women getting attacked and using the jiu-jitsu and getting out of terrible situations. So I think it's a great thing.
That's cool. So, in my recollection of martial arts, a lot of the art was in the discipline is not necessarily it's fighting, it's knowing how to conduct yourself in any situation, whether it's fighting or in the boardroom or whatever like that. Do you notice any of that? Has it helped you in other areas of your life?
Jiu-jitsu doesn't really, I remember taking karate as a kid and they talked a lot about these ideas. Jiu-jitsu doesn't really have that. I mean, I think it's innate to the martial art. You sort of go into it with this idea that if you want to get better, you have to be disciplined, but it's not really preached very much or discussed. But those lessons, I think if you were to talk to anyone that's practiced jiu-jitsu for a while, they would say that they've learned those lessons and that it has impacted their life. It certainly impacted my life. It's nothing new, but it's just like anything, right? You have discipline, you keep working on something, you have a certain poise and sort of executive level thinking around certain situations. It's going to not only help your jiu-jitsu because you're thinking, your primal self, you're wrestling another person, right? But you are, using your executive level thinking to get out of that situation. You're not giving into your fight or flight response, right? Again, it's not really talked about, but
those sort of ideas permeate in everything, right? I mean, whether it's business or, you know, if you're in some sort of altercation on the street, you know, if you're thinking through things clearly, you're always probabilistically going to end up in a better situation than what would happen. But again, interestingly, I've not trained at one gym where they talk about it like they do in other martial arts, probably.
Okay. Well, do you have any thing to put out there that we haven't talked about yet? Is there something about it that we've missed in this discussion?
I think no. I think there's definitely a lot. There's a lot of fleeting ideas that things I wanted to talk about while we're just going through these questions, but. I think if you're a listener to Keith's podcast, to like give it a try. I mean, there's a lot you can learn about yourself. It's a useful skill. There's a community aspect to it as well. I think that's one of the things Bunny and I like about our gym is, you know, people, we have this Instagram chat and, you know, you make friends at the gym. So there's just a lot of great things about it. And I don't think there's any barriers, whether you're a certain age or a certain weight or have, you know, certain injuries, unless it's something really, you know, that really physically can't make you do it. But yeah, there's people from all walks of life that get into it, and it's a great, great thing to do.
Well, it's awesome. Appreciate you talking to me today.
Yeah, of course. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks for letting me talk about one of my favorite subjects.
Oh, yeah.
All right.